I think we should be very careful about artificial intelligence. If I were to guess at what our biggest existential threat is, it's probably that. So we need to be very careful with artificial intelligence. We are summoning the demon.
That's Elon Musk, co-founder and CEO of Tesla, speaking at a conference at MIT. He's talking about artificial intelligence, the tech found everywhere from your iPhone to self-driving cars. Musk thinks the technology will start World War III. This is Issues Tank, a monthly podcast dedicated to issues affecting young people. And I'm your host, Teresa Schleep. This month, I spoke with Susan Epstein, a computer science professor at Hunter College, about AI.
So what exactly is artificial intelligence?
Artificial intelligence is the simulation of intelligent human behavior by a machine. So if tomorrow a rocket ship landed on Lexington Avenue and out came a bunch of little green creatures that were much smarter than people, I would stop paying attention to how people do things and pay attention to the little green creatures. However, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Can you explain to me what machine learning is in particular?
Machine learning is the idea that a machine changes its behavior based on its experience. So you need, in order to do that, you need a task that you have that you want the machine to do. You need a metric, a way of measuring how well the machine does it. And then you sort of take before and after pictures. But in between, it's the computer that figures out how to do better at the task.
What is artificial intelligence most commonly used in today? Where would we see it in our everyday lives, for example?
You'll find it everywhere from a thermostat that claims to be smart. I won't mention brand names, but there are some. To the prototypes for self-driving cars. You'll find it in any device that adapts to your behavior, which probably includes your smartphone.
Yeah, so I've read that Siri uses artificial intelligence, but sometimes Siri doesn't exactly answer certain questions. It'll just defer to Google. Why does it do that? Where are the holes in that type of programming?
That's a great question. Siri attempts to understand natural language, but like all machines, Siri lacks world knowledge. So when Siri doesn't have a pre-programmed mechanism for figuring out what you want, Siri can at best take words out of your question and use them to search on the web, and that's why she goes to Google.
Is there a future where we don't have to pre-program these machines, where we don't have to load them up with a certain amount of information that they can respond to, but rather they can learn that stuff on their own through their own mechanisms? Does that make sense?
The question makes sense. Is there a future? I don't have a crystal ball, but let's see. Okay. There are many people who believe that machines can write their own programs. I have certainly had limited experience with doing a little bit of that, and it happens and it works. You have to have the right programming language. So you can teach a program. You can teach a program to write a program is essentially what happens. For a machine to be set loose in the world to learn on its own, if you wanted it to learn the kinds of things that we already know, it would need sensors, much like the sensors we have. Because it has different sensors, my bet is ultimately that it will learn different things. That doesn't mean better or worse, just different.
I've heard, as I mentioned before, people like Elon Musk have been making these sort of warnings about the perils of artificial intelligence. He said, if we don't put in certain mechanisms to control it, then AI will be the start of World War III. Vladimir Putin just said recently that whoever capitalizes the most on this intelligence will be the global superpower. Do you think a lot of this is fear-mongering, or do you think there are valid concerns behind the safety of artificial intelligence?
So you have to think about science and whether or not you do science with the intent of adding to human knowledge or creating danger in the world. I think probably every scientific discovery has risks as well as rewards. There is no doubt in my mind that many things can be turned to do evil. I think that what we need is responsible scientists. We need scientists who are trained in ethics. And certainly if you build a super machine, if it's a bomb or if it's a mobile robot, it's dangerous. Does that mean you shouldn't build them? Well, an autonomous wheelchair would be a wonderful thing for a person who's disabled. So you'd certainly like to have an autonomous wheelchair, but if you put something evil on it, like a hand grenade, I guess it wouldn't be nearly as good an invention. That doesn't mean that most of us will stop doing science. But I do think that it's important to think about it responsibly. And I think that probably governments do need to pay attention.
So I've also read that some AI has shown some more human qualities, such as critically thinking. I've heard that some systems have been able to effectively argue court cases, for example, and litigate. And I know there's one man, Dr. Hansen, and he's been on the talk show circuit with his robot Sophia, and he said he would like to see a future where these robots can be a therapist or psychologist, which tends to be a more human occupation. Do you think there is a future where these robots can take on those human qualities and effectively litigate a court case or talk to a patient about their mental issues or something?
Okay, so those questions all involve what we call natural language. So the difference between natural language and programming language is that programming language is for machines, for robots and other computers. Natural language is English or Arabic or Chinese. Communication is an essential part of being human. We communicate with each other all the time, not just by language, but certainly it's a big part of it. And the ability to be a psychotherapist or to have a conversation requires a depth of understanding of natural language, which is something people are working on very hard, and it's slow coming. But for example, that little robot over there can tell you why she wants to turn right and then go 20 feet first, straight forward. That's something that's very difficult to do, and it requires figuring out how to explain to the computer how humans perceive the world. Because unless they have a shared, what we call mental model of it, the machine and the person, they're not going to be able to have a reasonable conversation, and they're not going to be able to have a convincing conversation. People have been trying to do psychotherapy with a machine since the late 1950s. There was a very early program called ELISA. And ELISA was a psychotherapist of a sort. Her training was such, it was a classical school of training where all she did was ask questions, and when you said something, she turned what you said back into a question and fed it back to you. ELISA was created by a man named Weizenbaum, and graduate students who used it had a very hard time stopping, even though they knew that they were, in those days, they were typing on a teletype machine, no screens, no keyboards. And they knew that the thing was a machine typing back at it. And yet, as one graduate student said, "Can I please work on this a little bit longer? This machine's the only person who ever really understood me." That's a direct quote. So, what does that mean? That's 1950s, and here we are in 2017. What it means is that when you get into depth of conversation or into understanding not just the train of thought of the human being, but having the computer maintain a train of thought and having those trains of thought in some way align with one another, that's a really hard thing to do. Some people aren't very good at it, let alone computers. So we have to think about that for a bit. As for arguing a court case, I would think the argument is probably fine as long as no one interrupts to ask a question. But then you're going to have the same problem. You need a shared mental model if you're going to be able to have a dialogue.
I understand Facebook makes a lot of its money advertising. In fact, all of its money advertising. And I read a ProPublica investigation recently that was basically about how Facebook made money off anti-Semitic advertisements. So somebody can put in their Facebook occupation a Jew hater, and anti-Semitic websites then could go on Facebook and target those people for advertising. What I wasn't exactly sure of was if that was artificial intelligence, like those algorithms used technically counted as AI, or if AI can improve that system and help prevent anti-Semitic websites or websites like that and Facebook from profiting off of those websites.
I'd have to see how the algorithm worked. If the algorithm just says, give me an adjective and I'll find you people like that, that's not particularly intelligent. And so would I call it, I think it'd just be sort of a big search engine where they're running through their database looking for people who said that. That said, every time you put anything on the internet, you're doing it because you need money, and you're doing it only by an ad base. That's what the internet is all about. So what is more interesting to me is I think that a lot of the political polarization that is happening on the planet, not just in the country, is due to people searching on the internet for their information and then discovering only the things that they will either enjoy or are curious about. And that leads one not to hear other people's opinions. And as soon as you restrict your intake of information to a search engine that is trying to please you so it can make money, you are never going to see the other side of any argument. And I think that's a great loss. There ought to be a way, and I challenged my AI class with this last semester. There ought to be a way to figure out how to present things that I really might not have picked out to read that would inform me without making me so angry that I'd never use that browser again, and that would broaden my knowledge in a way that was civilized. I think that's what we need to do. I think that would be a gift to the world.
Now, I don't mean to demonize artificial intelligence. These are just the majority of news reports I've been reading lately are about the economic losses because of artificial intelligence, or, you know, robots arming themselves with weapons. And it's a lot of not great news coverage on it. So do you think you can speak on the positives of artificial intelligence, why we should pursue researching it?
Sure. Okay, so we'll start with humanoid robots. There is a great deal of work now on humanoid robots to be used with children who are autistic. Autistic people, children in particular, want not much to do with other human beings. Somehow, an autistic robot that looks, a robot rather, that looks a lot like Charlie Brown, which is the way they design them with great big eyes, is something these children are willing to talk to, and they've made great strides in treating autistic children using the robots. So there's one. Those robots needed to be programmed to be responsive to the expressions on a human face, for example. That starts to become artificial intelligence. It's not like a cute wind-up toy that you put in the room. It's something that takes a great deal of thought. So there's one good example. There are many others. The design of prosthetic devices to replace damaged limbs. The use of a hand, for example, is extremely complex. If you can build a machine that can watch a hand do a movement and then replicate that movement, it's good for a robot assembly line, but it's also quite wonderful if you've lost your hand. And that is not in the very distant future. That's coming soon. So there are a lot of people working on things that will really make lives better. You don't have to be disabled to have your life made better, but the obvious need comes first, I think. After that, they'll be figuring out how to amuse us, perhaps. But in the meantime, they're writing music, and some of it's actually interesting. For a long time, they've been creating art. The art is getting more interesting. Some of the music you probably would enjoy, and you'd be surprised at your inability to tell who wrote it, person or machine.
Now, I know you said you don't have a crystal ball, right? So it's hard to anticipate where this technology is going to go, but knowing the research that you're doing, for example, with these robots or maybe some of your colleagues' research, where do you think artificial intelligence is going to bring us in 50 years? How do you think it's going to play in our everyday life? Or maybe not 50 years, maybe 10 years, 2025?
50 years is more interesting. I think long range, what artificial intelligence is going to do is change the nature of human work, much the way the invention of machines changed the nature of human work, that many things that had been done by hand were then done by machine. That didn't mean, certainly jobs went away, but new jobs became necessities. So I think that's probably what's going to happen. I would bet that we will spend a lot more time thinking of ways to amuse ourselves, which will call for creativity. People who are artists and musicians making use of technology. I think visual reality has a very interesting perspective on things. I think that we, particularly as the world becomes a more crowded place, perhaps we actually will go places without ever having actually been there. I don't think the nature of being human is going to change. I hope not.
Great. Thank you so much. Is there anything that you think I haven't touched on that you'd like to add?
One more piece of the future that I strongly believe in is that the future will not be either robot or human, but human and robot collaborating, working together. I think that because we are differently abled, humans and robots, that the best way for us to cohabit and to get things done and to have an enjoyable life, all of those, is to capitalize on the strengths of the people and the machines and have them work together. I've written on this subject a fair amount, and I think it's really an important idea. It's not either or, us or them. It's all of us together.
Thank you so much, Professor Epstein.
Yeah.